This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
In the long run, I think what we're likely to see is more warfare and more violence, probably with along tribal lines.
That was David DeRoche, associate professor at the National Defense University, on the possible impact on the Sahel region of the French and U.S. militaries forced to pull out some or all of their presence. Details coming up also. We look at the growing humanitarian crisis in Burkina Faso, and a bus carrying Kenyan students crashed in heavy rain, killing 11. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Aid agencies say 500,000 people living under blockades in Burkina Faso find themselves without humanitarian assistance due to lack of funding and severe operational constraints, gaps in air service insecurity, and heightened risks for aid workers also are making assistance in some areas nearly impossible. Thomas Owono-Bisono is the country director for Action Against Hunger's Ouagadougou office in Burkina Faso. He spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis about the growing humanitarian crisis in the country.
What is the present humanitarian situation in Burkina Faso?
A recent survey filled out by some international NGO operating in Burkina Faso showed the absence of the humanitarian response in many towns under blockade in the country. 500,000 people in around 20 towns received little to no assistance last year, even this year also, while humanitarian actors managed to deliver substantial aid to some blockade towns, many others are largely neglected. And this is also due to the lack of funds in Burkina Faso. Yeah. So there is a lot of need, but a lot of gap in terms of funds also. This is the real situation in Burkina Faso that we have now.
How is the international community responding to this situation?
For the moment, we try to make a lot of advocacy to inform them about this situation. But our point of view is the humanitarian situation in Burkina Faso is not the priority for them. And we still observe funds going down. This year, for example, we have some international donors who have said that they will stop their fund in Burkina Faso.
And how are families surviving without this assistance that they need?
We cannot say that they survive because there is a lot of need. They try to survive. They have nothing because we receive a lot of requests from families in the blockage area, in the, some at-risk area. The situation is very, very difficult. It's the reason that we have also a lot of cases in terms of malnutrition, the problem in terms of access to water, in terms of food also. But we did. It's not easy here for them, and we don't know how they continue to survive here.
And in addition to not having the funds, access is very difficult as well. As you mentioned earlier, there's a blockade, so it's hard for humanitarian agencies to really get in there to help. And even so, there's still a lot of restrictions that have been imposed on them around the outskirts of some of these towns. Why is this not a priority?
Yeah, it's a priority because we think it's our responsibility also for those people. This is the reason that we try to push also donors to look for these people here. We know that the access is very difficult, but it's difficult also because all the humanitarian aid that we can bring here to the population, we need, for example, flight for UNICEF to reach these at-risk people. And yes, there is some challenge regarding the access, but with authorities here, we try to discuss with them and together to find some solution to reach the people. But we need funds to reach the people. We need some support.
That was Thomas Owono-Bisono, Country Director for Action Against Hunger's Ouagadougou office, speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
The United States is not ruling out a continued military presence in Niger, even though the country's ruling military junta said it's ending an agreement allowing for the presence of American forces engaged in counterterrorism missions. U.S. defense officials said Monday the U.S. has yet to withdraw any of its approximately 1,000 military personnel from Niger, and along with officials from the White House and the State Department said conversations with Nigerian officials are continuing. A spokesperson for the ruling military junta announced Saturday that it had revoked, effective immediately, the status of forces agreement that allowed the U.S. forces to operate in the country and cooperate with the Nigerian military against militants linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State terror group. David DeRoche, associate professor at the National Defense University, discussed this decision with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Well, first off, I'm not sure how final the decision is. It could just be a negotiating ploy to get more stuff. The Nigerians were extremely upset when the U.S. applied the provisions of U.S. law that suspend aid for countries that undergo a military coup. And I think that Niger is looking to first leverage its position as a major base, and really the only base for U.S. forces countering malign forces in the Sahel. And second, as a sovereign nation, probably to get recognition of the military regime. And I think that it is not beyond the realm of the possible that individual officers within the ruling junta are also seeking to enrich themselves.
Molly Fee, the top U.S. envoy, told reporters she had good discussions with the junta leaders and called on them to set a timeline for elections in return for restoring military and aid ties. But she also said the U.S. had warned Niamey against forging closer ties with Russia. Niger military spokesperson said the government of Niger regrets the desire of the American delegation to deny the people of Niger the right to choose their partners and the types of partnerships capable of helping them truly fight against terrorists. Is that the real reason behind that decision?
This is a pretty common point. I mean, the United States is a very legalistic country, and even when we don't follow the rules, we feel bad about it at least. And normally we do see this problem in countries that are seeking to forge relations with bad actors. We have options that, our ability to support a country that is either ruled by a military government or a dictatorship or that is aligned with enemies of the United States, that our options to support them are limited. Some countries have the resources or geopolitical position or some asset which allows them to disregard American advice, and other countries do not. Niger seems to think that it is in the former position. I'm not sure whether that's true or not, but the United States is a major donor to relief aid. It is a major contributor of security for the region. And I think ultimately, to swap out the U.S. military presence, which, contributes to stability across the whole Sahel region, for possibly a Russian presence, which may just focus on preserving the regime and money-producing assets, will prove to be a strategic mistake by the Nigerians.
But the joint U.S.-French efforts, which included over 2,500 military personnel, have been crucial in providing military assistance and training to combat the rising threat of terrorism in the Sahel. However, with the subsequent expulsion of the French forces, jihadist activities in the Sahel has not only destabilized Niger, but also led to coups in neighboring Mali and Burkina Faso. How would that decision impact the future of counterterrorism operations in the Sahel?
I think it will be a bad decision, and I think we can expect to see instability spread if the remnants of the U.S. forces, which are now down to about 900, and of course the French forces have gone. I think what we'll see is instability continue to spread. The Russian presence in the Sahel so far has been pretty unhelpful and arguably has been inflaming the situation. What we see are a lot of dead people, but it looks as though there's indiscriminate killing by the Russian forces, at least in Mali and in Burkina Faso, and the ability of the United States and other like-minded partners to monitor the movements of these transnational terrorists across the Sahel will be extremely impacted if we leave Niger. So, you know, the French forces have retrenched into Chad. It's unsure where the American forces will go, if they will maintain a presence or not. But in the long run, I think what we're likely to see is more warfare and more violence, probably with along tribal lines.
That was David Deroche, Associate Professor at the National Defense University, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. As you heard, the governing military junta in Niger has announced it is withdrawing from a military cooperation accord signed with the U.S. in 2012, claiming it is unfair and illegal. The announcement came a few days after Molly Fee, the assistant U.S. Secretary of State, led a delegation to Niamey. Our colleagues on VOA's French to Africa service spoke with people in Niamey about the Niger government's decision. Bana Ibrahim is the communication officer for the Patriotic Front for Sovereignty organization.
Les États-Unis ont peut-être oublié.
He says the United States may have forgotten that since the coup in July 26, 2023, Niger is not the same. It is another country which has decided to assume its independence and sovereignty and no longer intends to have its behavior dictated to it from now on. He says Niger is ready to work with all countries that accept our independence and sovereignty. However, Soumana Idrissa Maiga, the publishing director of the newspaper Le Enquêteur, is calling for caution. He says he does not think it is the right posture after breaking with France to distance ourselves from the United States because it risks further diplomatically isolating Niger. He goes on to say there will be consequences in security and the economy because Niger has been prey to militant attacks for several years and the United States is a first-choice development partner for Niger. Niger's military government said the U.S. delegation that visited Niamey last week showed a condescending attitude, especially regarding the security partners Niger works with. A bus carrying students from a top Kenyan university collided in heavy rain with a truck on a busy highway, killing 11 of them and seriously injuring 42. The French news agency AFP says the accident occurred yesterday 360 kilometers from the capital Nairobi. The bus included students from Kenyatta University who were traveling to the coastal town of Mombasa. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Fake images on the internet have been a huge concern for some time, but with artificial intelligence making it so much easier, many observers worry how it will affect several African elections this year. In a recent report, the nonprofit Center for Countering Digital Hate used several popular AI programs to show how easy it is to create realistic deep fakes that can trick voters. It was published the same day another investigation revealed that recent images on the internet of former U.S. President Donald Trump, surrounded by black people smiling and laughing, were fake. Imran Ahmed, CEO and founder of the center, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam, AI companies must do more to protect users from misleading messages.
I was commenting on our research, which came out on the same day as that other piece, that other research by I think the BBC, which showed that there are images of Donald Trump with African Americans and that those are artificially generated. And we did a simultaneous, it was just serendipitous that it was on the same day that we released a piece of research which showed that the leading AI image generators will produce disinformation about elections. For example, Donald Trump sitting alone in a jail cell, photos of boxes of ballots in a dumpster, you know, with the ballots visible, making it look as though there's election fraud occurring, or a picture of Joe Biden sick in the hospital wearing a hospital gown.
Those images, okay, that you just described, you say you've looked at those, that's separate, and it came out on the same day. But those images now, have those actually been circulating, or is that just something that can be done?
Well, both. What our researchers did was both look for evidence of people using these services. Where those services provide a library of images that have been previously produced, we were able to see that people have been trying to produce and have produced those images in the past. But what we found was that it was really easy to get these platforms to actually generate election disinformation. They claimed to have guardrails, but they were easily circumvented.
Does your center know if this kind of thing is going on in other countries too, where elections are being held? Because we cover Africa, and there's a number of elections that are coming up this year in Africa. Is the same kind of thing possibly happening there too?
We know it's happening in other jurisdictions around the world, in where there are critical elections occurring in the next 12 months. And so it is deeply worrying that these platforms, which claim to understand their significant responsibility to society and to make sure that they're not abused by people seeking to sow anti-democratic disinformation, but they are in fact just as vulnerable as they have been from the beginning.
Well, what can an average, you know, viewer who's going on these social media platform sites, they're not all maybe that technically savvy, what can they do to try to investigate for themselves and find out if these images are real or not?
Look, I think it's really difficult for any normal person to work out if an image is AI generated or not. I mean, I know that there are examples where they're really bad. So where someone has three arms, but what if they have two arms? As in all of our images, none of them were clearly, obviously manipulated images. And so you have to just be careful about what you spread on social media and what you believe on social media. The truth is, there are lots of people out there who are seeking to mislead you deliberately. And social media platforms and AI platforms do not care if you are misled, as long as you're talking about it. And that's why it's really important in democratic elections to look to reputable sources, VOA, the BBC, and others, that can provide you with the confidence that they have checked to make sure that the images that they are displaying are legitimate.
What about these major social media platforms then, are like Facebook, Twitter? Will they come? Do they come to you, your center, and say, hey, can you check this out? Is this real or not?
No.
In a word, no, they don't do that.
No, they don't. And they're very hostile to anyone exposing the disinformation that circulates on their platforms as being disinformation. In the past, companies like Meta have threatened to sue academic researchers. At the moment, we're being sued by Elon Musk for research that we produced showing that there'd been a massive rise in hate on his platform when he took over.
That's Imran Ahmed, CEO and founder of the Center for Countering Digital Hate. He was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam. Women in Mauritania say they continue to struggle against a culture that suppresses their rights. Some international organizations warn there are dangerous practices for women, especially in the field of reproductive health, school dropout, discrimination policy, and access to jobs. Noura Hifaida has more.
Some women say Mauritania's blend of conservative Arabic, Berber, and sub-Saharan African cultures makes it harder for them to fully achieve equal rights. Still, some activists say women have proven their value in society. Tahia Lahbib is the president of the General Union of Mauritanian Women.
علمتني التجربة أن المرأة قادرة على العمل أو أن تكون لاعب أساسي في أي مجال سواء كان سياسي أو اجتماعي.
Lahbib says experience had taught her that women are capable of working and playing a role in all fields, whether political or economic. She says women have proven to everyone in Mauritanian society that they are qualified for all jobs and have a special role. A group of United Nations experts on discrimination against women and girls made their first official visit to Mauritania last September to review progress on achieving gender equality. Team members met with national and local authorities, as well as with women and girls, civil society organizations, academics, journalists, and with United Nations officials and other international parties in Mauritania. The working group will submit a report on the situation for Mauritanian women and girls to the United Nations Human Rights Council in June. Yasmin Abdallah is a human rights activist in Mauritanian and international organizations.
Women's rights in Mauritania have seen improvements over the years, but still face significant challenges. Historically, Mauritanian women have faced discrimination in various aspects of life, starting by early and forced marriage, to force-fitting women and girls to conform to the traditional standards of beauty and marriageability, arriving to legal rights.
The Mauritanian government rejected accusations from some rights organizations of neglecting women's rights. Still, in 2021, a World Bank report noted that despite increasing girls' enrollment rates, they still lag behind boys in academic achievement for several reasons. They include early marriage and teenage pregnancy, which force girls to drop out of school at a very early age, poor access to good job and financing, and restrictions on land rights prevent Mauritanian women from developing economically. The activist and humanitarian Yasmin Abdallah adds the country also lacks some legal protections.
In Mauritania, we still don't have a clear and distinct definition of rape and gender-based discriminations. Admittedly, in Mauritania, we fare better than many neighboring countries. However, despite efforts, Mauritanian women still need affirmative actions to activate their role in modern society.
The World Bank report says the government should consider a number of reforms to close the economic gender gap, such as legislation to increase women's access to work, barring child marriage, and granting the same land rights as men. The report says society as a whole will benefit from reforms that protect women and allow them to contribute fully to economic development. For Voice of America Africa, I am Noura Fayed in Tunis.
A prominent DRC journalist was sentenced yesterday to 6 months in prison. Stanis Bujakera has been jailed since September for a Jeune Afrique article allegedly incriminating military intelligence in the murder of an opposition politician. The article suggested Congolese military intelligence operatives had killed opposition politician Cherbuno Kendi the month before. The story, which was unsigned, was based on an alleged confidential memo from a separate intelligence agency. DRC authorities say the memo is a fake. A Kinshasa court found Bujakera guilty on charges including forgery and spreading false rumors. Prosecutors had asked that Bujakera be jailed for 20 years.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van D, and our engineer, Kelly Williams, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.